Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I would like to maybe start by saying that I don't really refer to it as giving a talk. It's more like sharing some reflections and thoughts that came to me over the past month that I've been here, and also actually before. And also, it's a little bit tricky with the concept of teacher. I much rather see myself or refer to myself as the Buddha is calling it a good friend, Kalayana Mitra. I feel much more comfortable in that position, so please allow me to be good friend now and share whatever wants to be shared, and I do hope it will be for the benefit of some of you at least. Also, if anything comes up, like during what I'm saying, so please feel free. It's not like a proper talk, that, you know, although I'm sitting high for some reason, I mean, just feel free to, yeah, come in and give your beautiful share. I mean, I can see each person sitting here just as well, so, and I mean it, so, like for me, it's, we're all in it together. And last thing, a little bit of maybe apology for my English, which sometimes will deteriorate, so I will need the help of my friends here. Now, when Nicole asked me to consider giving a talk, I said I would think about it, and actually it came like a download, something very quickly, so. And also it's quite kind of cool that today it's Monday, and usually Monday is, it's for many years the day that I'm teaching, one of those days, but like on a regular basis, so it's again like something nice is coming together. And the subject that came to me is the topic of intimacy. And I really tried to sort of organize it. It didn't work. Like my mind is totally, you know, after 1 month almost, is very unorganized. So please forgive this sort of, I don't know, whatever comes. And intimacy is a concept, one of my favorite. And actually, it was used by Dogen, the Zen master, when he defined enlightenment. He said, enlightenment is being intimate with all things. And every time I think about this phrase, I get a little bit, wow, you know, because he said all things. He didn't say, hey, let's get intimate with a sweet and nice and beautiful and, I don't know, tasty part of life. He said all things. Like, really? Including everything? Like, every terrible, worst possibility that you can imagine? That also, please. Get intimate with that. But what is it, intimacy? And why is it so important that Dogen said it's actually enlightenment. Wow, freedom. Well, you might say that intimacy is about connection. It's about being in relations, in relationship to something or somebody or ourselves. You might say also it's a little bit about timing, meaning we are not ahead of ourselves. Like John was saying the other day, that he feels, maybe it was like a million years ago, but it was like 2 weeks ago maybe, that he feels a little bit like half second or 1 second always like late or something like that. So maybe we can also put together intimacy is being something that has to do with timing, like right here, right now. Okay, this is it. And oftentimes when we think about intimacy, sometimes, I mean, maybe like this contraction is going on inside of us because we feel, wait a minute, I'm not sure I want to get intimate with that. And besides, you know, if we talk about being intimate with another person, immediately comes the question in us, well, so how do I protect myself? You know, if I get too close, I might get hurt. So it's not such a good deal, and I better sort of make sure that I'm protected. And when we think about that, we might even sometimes use the metaphor of this oyster that has like a pearl in it. And the oyster, you know, it's very, very soft. And the pearl is actually, you know, it started up as a grain of sand that hurt the oyster. Oyster, it's the word? I'm not sure. Just to make sure I'm not talking about some other sea creature. So the sand get in, and it's painful for this creature, for the oyster. But some oysters, and not others, some have this capacity to create actually a very beautiful thing out of this pain, a pearl. But still, it's hurt. It's hurting, it's painful. So it's like maybe we carry this image with us of, if I get too open, ouch, you know, I'm not sure. So I would like to suggest maybe to start with another image, to drop this one of the oyster and maybe look at openness more as like the space that is really all pervading and everywhere and cannot actually get hurt. Did you try ever to hurt space? It's impossible. Because it's so open, because it's so big, because it's so vast, and because we are all in it, it's totally safe, protected. So we can maybe carry this image within us. Sometimes, you know, when we talk about intimacy and being intimate with all things, immediately we get to see the dark points, like the dark side in us. And immediately this is what's sticking out in our consciousness. And it's quite interesting to see how the mind is really picking up on the parts that we feel in ourselves are not good, not perfect, not beautiful. The smelly parts, sometimes we like to call it. And when we talk about intimacy, we cannot skip another concept, which we mentioned the other day, maybe yesterday as well, the concept of acceptance. And I would like to actually...
Broden?
A little bit, yeah, thanks. By offering a concept that is close by and is radical acceptance. Radical acceptance, actually meaning there's a very beautiful article, I think written by Tanisawa Bhikkhu, one of the monks in the Theravada tradition, talking exactly about that. And he said, if I remember correctly, he said that for him, radical acceptance doesn't mean that you have to love the thing that you don't like or don't love, but it actually means that you understand that everything belongs. Like everything belongs, including this, like everything. And it's a little bit take the weight off this, oh my God, I mean, I have this tendency in me and I don't like it, and I'm trying to repair myself or fix myself or change myself, and hey, you know, maybe something else is needed here. Maybe another kind of eyes to look within and figure out and understand that even this has a place under the sun. Even this belongs. Whatever it is, doesn't matter. And interestingly enough, the beloved Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh loved to speak about the smelly parts in us. He calls it compost. And you know, the compost is what makes the flowers grow and the fruits and the vegetables. I mean, it's hopeless without it. It's like too clean. I mean, we won't risk it here in India, but it's like life cannot grow without compost. Without these places in us that are, we think of them as not perfect. But you know, if you actually look at an olive tree, where I live, there's like an amazing, amazing olive grove. I think somebody told me they are 1,000 years old. I don't know, that's like this huge thing, living thing, that is like all twisted. The trunk is like so, you know, weird and twisted, and sometimes it locked inside of it these stones also. And it has holes and some burns and whatnot. And it's so beautiful. And, you know, life made it that way. And I'm just thinking sometimes if we had to be that olive tree, we would say to ourselves, oh my God, I'm so not perfect. I'm so not straight. How come I have all these bends and, you know, like this thing is coming off here and this and that, and this bird is just ate a part of it, and we would do anything, like a plastic surgery, some people do for some reason, to eliminate this beauty. Because we think something is wrong with it, because it's not as it should be. When we really, really allow ourselves to get closer and closer and even closer, yeah. And it takes a lot of courage sometimes, like we totally don't like it. It's like we prefer to run 100 miles in the opposite direction. But if we can do it, and sometimes, you know, it's like the bravest thing a human being can do. It's like this tiny movement inside, sort of like this. I'm doing it because I have a memory of like 12 years ago, sitting a retreat with Christopher. And I came from a like very harsh practice of Goenkaji, which I love dearly and I appreciate very much, but still quite harsh, and I loved it. And I got really deep, and some things were missing, like softness, like acceptance, like love, you know. For me, anyway, that's how it was in the process. And sitting with Christopher, I was just shocked from his style and what he's doing there. And Kailash, were you there? I'm not sure. I think so. In Bodh Gaya. Yeah. And I just remember, like one experience, I was sitting, like everyone were just like here, sort of like not as much as here lying down, but still, you know, we had very kind of relaxed, Christopher would say, like a summer holiday in comparison to a Goenka retreat. But I was sitting like a rock, you know, I had shaved hair and I was like going for the enlightenment. And, you know, like, I can call it grace. I don't know. It certainly wasn't my doing. And it was in spite of that effort like harsh effort. I was like doing something in me sort of softened, and I could literally make that movement towards something that I would never dare to do before. And I can't even tell you what it is. I can just say that it felt so surprisingly soft and welcoming and gentle. I was so shocked to discover it in myself. It's like, wow. And sometimes, yeah, I mean, sometimes if it doesn't come like that with grace, maybe it's one of the bravest things we can do as human beings to ourselves. Some would call it self-love, but I find this concept really difficult for some of us. I mean, if we don't have it, so it's like, it's even more frustrating to manifest it. How? From where? You know? So maybe it's more beneficial to talk about softness, to talk about gentleness, to talk about openness. I don't know. Find for yourself if it's better for you. And only then, when we really are able, even for like a split of a second, you know, to meet this place on the spot, on the momentum, like that, something transforms in us, in the way we relate to that thing, in the way we relate to ourselves and to the world. And actually, to be intimate with all things, it's an act of lovemaking, you might say. We dare to touch parts in ourselves and in another with care and respect and awe. And it is through that that we change and we open and we grow. And then when we really close intimate with whatever monster or princess inside, we can respect them as part of this sort of mysterious creation. Hey, because it wasn't us really who created this in the first place, was it? Did any one of you guys woke up in the morning and said, hey, today I'm going to be really, really negative. Like, I'm going to hate everyone with passion. and I'm gonna hate myself as well. Why not? It just like, you know, it meets us like that, and we are so quick to take ownership over that thing. It's just amazing. Such a chutzpah, we call it. I don't know, how do you translate
nerve.
It?
Nerve, such a nerve.
Yeah, like, who do you...
Rude.
Who do we think we are? Honestly, to take ownership over these things inside of us. Why? Like, does it have our name written on it? Saying, oh, it's mine. I was born like that. I'll always be like that. I find the Buddha's teaching really, really helpful in that sense of seeing things as causes and conditions. But I won't get into it. It's, thanks God, not a Buddhist retreat. I can skip that part, although I love it. And I'd like to offer more something like seeing the non-ownership in it and taking it lightly. You know, probably the joke, like, why, or maybe it's true, you know, why angels can fly? You
know, that's all right.
Because they take themselves lightly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, most of the time we're just burdened with these things inside of us because we sort of, we find something and we hold on to it really tight, and then we tie it on our back and we continue and another thing and another thing, and we get so heavy. Another aspect I wanted to talk about in... when I talk about intimacy, it's a very beautiful way of looking at things. I've been to a quite radical community called the Tamera in Portugal. Also, Eric, you've been there. And it's a community of peacemaking, a very interesting one. And one of the leaders there, a woman called Sabina Lichtenfeld, she has this beautiful phrase that I often use. She said, it's through the connection that the sacred is revealed. It's through the connection that the sacred is revealed. And you might think of connection or intimacy with just about anything. Yeah. First of all, ourselves. Yeah. The breath, the body. Then when we walk, like the feet on the ground, and then, or sounds. But actually, when we talk about connection with somebody else, yeah, just the simple fact of the ability to be able to make this connection with another human being, it's quite extraordinary. It's quite amazing. Because what is happening there in the connection, well, Sabina said, the sacred is revealed. Yes, and many other things as well. Like, we can, many times I see it in myself that, you know, sometimes, often, I have to admit when I'm giving a Dharma talk, I have the subject, but I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth. A little bit like now, yeah? And it's through something in the connection, something else is revealed. And it's more like that when we are engaged in, like, a conversation, let's say, or just changing, I don't know, energies on many levels with another person. We get to change. We get to understand ourselves better. We get to surprise ourselves so many times. It's like we come with an agenda to life or to somebody else, and then always, I mean, it's my experience anyway, there is a surprise. Always, like the things that come out of us when we speak to somebody, like we can plan going to an interview with Nicole or Jane, like have this list of questions. What am I going to do with my life from now on? Or how to solve this terrible, terrible problem I have? And like, something else is happening in the connection. Yeah? Like, another thing is revealed to us. I went with Ajay the other day to Bhimtal, and it was quite an experience. And on the way, I got to ask him many, many questions. So, if you want to go to Bhimtal with Ajay, please, like, use the opportunity. And one of them, I asked him, "Hey, you know, if you weren't a family man, you know, because there's many, many obligations and big family. If you weren't a family man, what would you be?" And I was thinking, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, you would probably just, I don't know, be in this amazing place, just by himself, meditating in bliss all day. I don't know what I had in mind. And reading Yoga Vasishtha, you know, all day. And he said, "I'll probably be a family man." And I said, no, but, you know, but if, I thought he didn't understand. "But if you weren't a family man," he said, "I'd probably be one." And he meant it. So, like, quite interesting the way life reveals itself to us. Quite different than we think. And many times in those relationships, amongst other things, what is coming out and manifesting dare I say and use that word love. In that context, I just love Leonard Cohen's song, one of his poems, where he says, "It is in love that we are made. In love, we disappear." You know that one? From 10 New Songs? Ah, it's the most brilliant album. Get it? "It is in love that we are made. In love, we disappear." What does he mean by that, I think? Probably, maybe. Like, something around this force of creation, we can call it love, we can call it connection. We can use so many different names to it. And sometimes I don't like to use the word love because it's so used. It's like, and it reminds us so much of, I don't know, some. It carries so many saccharinic context. But we have to use something. So what is this force and what is this thing that moves us and creates us and makes us the way we are? And in it, we can also disappear. And what is really disappearing there? Jay was talking the other day about the three levels, remember? It's the seed, like the potential. And then we have the expression, right? And then the third level, he called it the ground. You remember? Or I'm making it up? No, it was there, right? Okay. Now, in the field of potential, like, you know, according to the Buddha's concepts, it's like, well, it's actually a much later teaching. They call it alaya vijnana. It's like a store, a warehouse, you know, yeah, of all seeds. Like everything, every possibility can be there. Like everything you can possibly think about and probably not is there as a potential, as a seed. Okay? That's the view. Now, whatever we sort of choose, and I'm a bit reluctant to use the word choice, but that's another topic. I won't go into it. Whatever we choose, yeah, to pay attention to, whatever we choose to water, let's say, and give compost and expose to the sun, might have the option to grow. Yeah? But we have everything inside of us. Like, in a different way, the Buddha said, like, whatever you put your attention to, that's what you become. It's so simple. Like, really, I mean, it's like really mechanic, even. That's why I like it so much. It's like, it's no complication. It's like really, really simple. It talks about conditioning. And the level of expression, the field of expression, there is where the whole field of conditioning bursting through. Like everything that is conditioned, basically. Like this whole thing and us, including. And we are very, very much creatures of conditioning. Whatever we put, that's what we'll get. Yeah. If we'll meditate, you know, there's bigger chances of something to develop or something to reveal in us and so forth. If we eat junk food, yeah, the body will respond in a certain way. It's like, I mean, very, very basic. But also, if we think junk thoughts, yeah, just the same, just the same. And by junk thought, I mean, like, thought basically hurt us. That's all. Like junk food. And it can get a little bit tricky here because can we really control our thoughts? Can we really say to ourselves, hey, don't think it? Well, actually we can. And actually it's much, much, much easier than it seems. As long as there is awareness there and we can catch it in the moment, like, remember, intimacy has this part of timing. We can really see it in the moment, that this is what is happening in the mind, without falling into the place of ownership. Oh, why do I think this way? Or worse, identifying with this. Like, I'm thinking something really bad about somebody, like we don't like the way they eat, or the color of their shawl, or whatever. And like, we have this whole, the Buddha called it papancha, like it's a word in Pali, proliferation. Yeah, like going on, like the whole story, the whole movie is going on. But when we catch it, when we're really able to see it, we can actually say no. And that's the cool part about it, because usually it's not much mentioned, our ability to say, hey, no. And many times when we say no, we have problems with that. We have problems with borders, like most of us. We don't know how to say no. We think that saying no meaning violence. We think that, or we feel that saying no means to maybe other person, means we will lose the love. But actually, and it's quite an art to learn to say no with what I call loving borders. Like saying no, like you would to a child that is running, I don't know, to the road and can get killed. And you just say no, and the child might scream, but anyway you say no. And it's an act of love. And it's okay that she screams, you know, but you do it anyway. So maybe at the beginning there will be a little bit of this screaming, the mind child will scream. But it's a lot about education, really, self-education. But it has to be done with care and with love. All this month I'm reading this amazing book about this amazing woman called Peace Pilgrim.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, yeah.
Just try to connect two thoughts you brought into the talk.
Yeah.
You said sort of this early on about the smelly parts, which we should get it connected or intimate to. That's sort of one way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you brought this concept in with this storage, with the seeds in the warehouse, and I read about that too, and so, but it also, doesn't it also say we should somehow avoid the unwholesome parts, sort of like not watering all the seeds?
Yeah,
so is that a contradiction, or is it is it just something which I haven't quite grasped
yet? No, I think you have actually grasped. It's like, it might seem like a contradiction, but actually when we meet those smelly parts, we meet them with a wholesome intention. We don't meet them with violence. We don't meet them with rejection. We don't meet them with hatred. We, if we can, and that's the art of it, we meet them with love, with care, with lightness also. It's like, okay, here is jealousy again. Welcome, sit down. Here is hatred again. Here is self-blame again. Here is judgment again. So what, you know? So it just came like a movement in us. No big deal. But the wholesome part is saying no. Like to a child. Eh? You won't scream at her. You just say no. Yeah, very simple. And not make a big deal out of it. If she wants to come through the window, I said no. I said no. It can be really funny, you know, sometimes just to see how the tendencies want to still run the show, because they've been, you know, kings and queens for so many years. So of course they'll be there and they give a good fight. Yeah, but if you're not engaged in fighting, but in something else, quite quickly I find they melt. And that's where I like this amazing woman comes here. Her name is Peace Pilgrim, actually. She doesn't have a name. That's the name she gave herself. And she's already dead, an American woman that started off a peace pilgrim, going in the name of peace for disarmament and that, for 30 years. Now, I don't know if you can grasp this crazy, amazing fact. This woman, this grandmother, actually, for 30 years, she walked basically five times, I think, in the whole of America, in Alaska, in Hawaii. Like, she stopped counting miles after 25,000. And all she carried with her was herself. Like, that's how she looked, with this, sweatshirt, and saying Peace Pilgrim on the front. Like, nothing, no money. She didn't use money. And she just, whenever people would offer her food, she would eat. Whenever people would offer her a place to sleep or stay the night, she would stay. And she would walk from town to town and speak to people, in different congregations and, I don't know, to students and television and radio and whoever wanted to listen. Very, very simple messages, pacifistic. She was a very simple woman. And I really recommend this book. I mean, it's quite amazing. And friends of her made a site that I haven't managed to look at it. It's just somebody just gave me the book, so you can probably find it there. But what she said about her way of life, maybe, and about meditation. She said, if you are really meditating, your body is so comfortable that you are not aware of it. Your emotions are serenely still. Your mind is at peace, waiting, but not pushing. Now that you are receptive and silent, divine receiving can take place through your divine nature. It is very important that you put into practice insights that come to you. And in a way, it brings us to the third level that Ajay was talking about, the level of ground. Like, she calls it divine nature. We can call it the mystery or the sacred, if you like this language. But when we sort of work our way through conditioning, through the field of expression, like, remember the metaphor Ajay was giving the other day about the balloon, that if you sort of stretch it, thank you, stretch it enough, you can start to see through. I mean, it's quite, I don't know, for me, stretching a balloon, it's a bit scary, but anyway, it's like, and by stretching, sometimes, you know, it needs a little bit of force there. Some kind of resistance is there, and you need to put some effort into stretching it. And sometimes it's the same effort that the Buddha called to go against the stream. Like, we go against the stream of society, you might say, by just sitting here or lying down here and doing nothing. Everyone else running around, busy, making money, I don't know, making life, making family, making something. And we are busy non-making, actually, like letting things fall more. But I think it's mostly going against this stream of our habitual patterns, of our energy patterns, the things that run the show, mostly. And when many times we talk about being aware of these patterns, but I think the part of putting an effort to stop it many, many times is missing. And it is in the teaching, broadly, I would say. Just saying no, yes, just saying no when this thought is coming, just like maybe for the millionth time in a day, it's some kind of effort. It's like the balloon is getting stretched. And then, maybe then, we can finally fall. Ajay calls it to fall. Actually, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj, beautiful, beautiful teacher. He was the teacher of Ramesh Balsekar, my teacher in Bombay. And he used that metaphor as well. He said, you can look for ways, for the holes in the net. But actually, it's very easy because the net, he said, full of holes. Yeah, exactly, that book. So it's easy, he said. The net is full of holes. If you think about a net, you have to be small enough to fall. That's all.
Can I say something?
Yes, please.
About this saying no,
yes,
to tendencies arising in the mind.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that's good, but looking into it, I discovered that most of these tendencies come from something. They come from self-hatred,
mm-hmm,
like all anger, jealousy,
mm-hmm,
yeah, envy. And to go to that pain of self-hatred and bring that home is, for me, the wiser option.
Mm-hmm.
Because it will come back if the root is not looked at.
Yeah.
It feels a bit like militaristic to say.
Yeah.
Militaristic is maybe the wrong word. But
harsh, you mean?
Yeah, stressful.
Stressful,
somehow.
Yeah. Yeah,
but sometimes it's useful.
Yeah,
but for me, I discovered really it all comes from not loving myself.
Mm. Yeah,
and to go to that pain.
Yeah,
can also heal that tendency.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's really really good to remember that everything like we talk about is like a big algaskilim, like box of tools. Yeah. and I call it art because we, at different times or different people, like we need different things. It's not like the right choice forever to do. But I wanted to give some emphasis to this one because, first of all, mostly it's not really emphasized. And we talk a lot about sort of letting it be and by that letting it go, which is very, very beneficial as well. So I wanted to do some promotion to this kind of option, let's say. And I would say it has to be done with love. Otherwise it won't work. It has to be done with care and with respect. That's mostly. And with humor and with lightness. And the reason I'm talking about it so much is because this is what I've been practicing in this retreat. And it's been really, really working for me. So I'm sharing it like that, easy. Usually in retreats, I get the tendencies of being really negative. And so, but this time, I said, okay, you know, this time I'm going to just explore negativity and seeing what it is, because I try to work with it in many different ways and go to the root and this and that and the other. Didn't work. Like at the end I just let it be and whatever, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. But this time I said, let me say no. Let's see what happens. And for me it worked, so I'm sharing it with you. Yes, Leniji.
Sometimes what I do is I was just reading something very recently that Pema Chodron, my teacher, I guess, whatever, said, is that when you have these negative things occur, like you were saying,
just to love them, to have a loving relation with them. Normally, you know, I hate those things. I hate that about myself. I hate that I think those thoughts. And it's just quite an experience for me right at the moment now to love those things.
Right.
Because it's just, it's really contradictory to logic, to human logic, to love them rather than reject and, you know. So anyway, that's...
Great. I say whatever works. Really, really, I mean it. Whatever works. And at different times, different things would work for us.
Yeah, and so I think there's a lot of value to the saying no. It seems like sometimes when I'm in retreat, I can say no better than when I'm just off.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also, you know, by saying no, what's really, really important is the tone of voice we use. Like, we wouldn't want to scream at a child and make her really frightened and, I don't know, traumatized for life just because she did something wrong or dangerous. It's really, really in the tone that we use. And that's why I'm saying we can call it love, we can call it friendship, call it whatever you want to call it. Doesn't matter. But it's like getting closer, closer, closer until that thing is not scary so much anymore. And the closer we get, it's less scary.
Yeah, Pema Chodron said, let me see. Oh, I can't. Just one second. I can't.
And she says today you need to have a compassionate relationship with it.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. To have a compassionate relation with those things.
Yeah.
That sounds better to me.
Yeah. Great.
That for some reason those words seem to connect.
Great. Grab it with two hands and just, you know, be that compassion if you can.
Yeah,
just a minute. Yeah.
One thing that was useful for me was how Nicole's been giving the guided meditations when she says, just like, tell it to leave you alone for now, and it can come back later. And it kind of works because it's not directly saying no, it's not like really rejecting, like, but it's just like, right now I just want to relax.
Just on that topic, I just remembered when you talk something that I totally, a sentence I heard and I forgot. It was 6 years ago, I was studying yoga in some ashram, actually Kailash. I met Kailash there. So maybe you will remember the guy who said it because I don't remember now his name. And it was kind of, how to say, the atmosphere there was like during the day everybody was doing yoga, meditation, being very serious. But in the evening it was very social. It was like there were much less rules. There were many young people, so they would meet, smoke something, talk, you know. It was kind of that. And as it happens in these things, people start because they never met before, and a lot of young people. Everybody was working on his image a little bit, like thinking what to say and thinking of him. Like happens, I think, in these situations also sometimes, thinking of how to say something that sounds very intelligent or witty or spiritual or whatever. And then the next day morning, and there was one evening that it went a little bit too far. I also felt that I was too much. And there was another guy, next morning I was, I remember his name, he was also from Jerusalem. we were talking the next morning, both talking about that, like about last night. And we both suddenly said, because we were in this yoga and meditation, and then the evening comes and we're, and And then he said to me, he was like 2 months already in the ashram. So he said, I thought about this subject a lot. And I decided I make a contract with my ego. Sometimes if it's really important for him in this situation, maybe because there's girls around or whatever, and he wants a little bit to... So I tell him, okay, you can do it, you can go, but you have to let me know a few minutes before. So, like, you have to let me know that you're going to say things that are not real and boast a little bit and try to be funny. You can do it, but you have to let me know a few minutes before. So, you know, I'm aware of that, you're aware of that, and... So that's kind of not saying no, but but it is trying to acknowledge it. And
yeah,
I think that's a really just said it like that, but I think it's a really nice way of dealing with things that you don't like. It's like you're not trying to abolish them. You're just trying to watch them a little bit, like gardener.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah,
I've also had the experience of doing. Focusing, which is quite similar to what Lenny's talking about, you know, really giving things space and permission to speak and kind of speak their pain and things. And then sometimes a part, it's like a 4-year-old child who has a tantrum, who it just totally loses it.
Yeah.
And actually the best thing for it is to say, actually no, you need to go to your room right now, close the door, and we'll kind of talk about it later.
Yeah.
So I sort of discovered a way of when actually a really firm no within that process was actually really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Almost blending the two methods.
I think, now like listening to you, and I think maybe it's also has to do with the, I would say, the length of time that we spent with those tendencies aware, like, and we did many things and it was still there. Like, for me, what was really helpful to say this kind of no, first of all, I mean, Peace Pilgrim is talking about it, so I got a lot of inspiration from her, so that's where the idea came. But also with it came this we call it vairagya, yes, it's Sanskrit, like this enough already, you know, I'm tired of you, die, you know? I mean, enough. So it's in Hebrew. So it's really different where it's when it meets us on the way, but like different tools, and they're all very, very good. I just wanted to finish off with maybe we have a little more just a little more few sentences that, like, coming back to the subject of intimacy, that many times when we manage to cross through, this seems like sometimes never-ending land, the what Zorba called it, the full catastrophe. You know, it's like... But sometimes something in us manage to relax enough or tired enough, like I was talking about now, or sort of tired enough of the game, or maybe trusting enough, which... This is a thing that can happen in a relationship, in a connection with another human being, when the trust can be healed. And this something in us is, can be, finally, can trust life enough so this magic happens and the third level is being revealed to us, what Ajay was calling the ground, and we sort of fall in a very natural place that is, I feel, I believe, is our birthright, really. And all the rest is paraphernalia. It's, I mean, really, it's a right to be there. It's a right to be loved. It's a right to be safe and with trust and healed. And then sometimes when we can fall into these places, or place, or not place, or whatever you want to call it, language doesn't carry us through that arena, then we can be open enough to let life move us in a very beautiful way. Ajay was talking about spontaneity, and actually, according to the Buddha, it's also a trademark of the enlightened person. When we just let go of all these little things and big things we think of ourselves, and we are sure, absolutely sure, 100% sure, this is us. And like, sometimes it takes another person, it's necessary to have another person to point us to that glory we are, this greatness we are. Like Nicole was putting, I think, these beautiful phrases on the wall. It's our greatness, our light that we fear. But often we simply don't see it, because the tendencies and the habits are so, they stick so close to us like a wet plastic bag, like on our face, you know. We don't see it. And we are so much bigger and so much more beautiful. It's just amazing. And it takes another human being to see it and actually help us here. And this might be another interpretation of, it's in the connection that the sacred is revealed. There's a saying in Hebrew that the prisoner cannot make himself free, take himself out of prison. So it points to the same place. We need the other. We need the connection. And many times, because of that, thanks to that, we can fall into this place of wider understanding of the interconnectedness, of being cells in one big, beautiful body. And through that, a very big healing can happen, and a very beautiful human being can be born. So, there are a few more things, but I think we leave it at that, if that's okay. And unless somebody has some spontaneous thing that pops up right now, please feel free to pop up. So, yes? Popping? No one? So we can sit with it a little bit.